This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Could climate change bring us the next financial crisis? Yes, indeed, say two new reports. We'll go to London to get the lowdown on the new report from the Grantham Institute of the London School of Economics. Find out why big institutions like Citigroup, HSBC, the World Bank, and the IMF agree fossil fuel companies have developed a huge bubble based on carbon reserves they can never burn. Pay attention. Your pension funds and banks are heavily invested in the next financial crash. Everybody is. From the Canadian tar sands to Australian coal pits, energy companies are loading up with yesterday's fuel until the climate crunch, which is already arriving. John Connor of the Climate Institute says the coal industry is ripe for financial implosion. I'll wrap up with a quick answer to another bothersome question. Why is the super sunshine state of Arizona still burning so much coal? With Nancy LaPlaca.
In the spring of 2013, stock markets hit new highs. Leading the pack were the most profitable companies in the world, the big oil, gas, and coal companies. At the same time, polls showed the majority of the public believe climate change is real. What happens when these two opposites collide? According to a new report from leading economists, the carbon bubble could pop, leading to another serious financial crisis. To explain, I've reached a lead author of the report, Unburnable Carbon 2013, Wasted Capital and Stranded Assets. Bob Ward is Policy and Communications Director for the Grantham Institute at the London School of Economics. Bob Ward, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hi.
Well, I'm glad that we connected because this new report is so hard to believe. How could big money makers like Shell, ExxonMobil, and the rest lead us into the next economic crisis?
Well, the fact is, I don't think they are thinking far enough ahead and thinking about the risks to which their companies and the investors in their companies are being exposed. And actually, it's a relatively straightforward calculation. We know that the overall objective that countries have agreed to in terms of climate change is to reduce global emissions of greenhouse gases to a level that would give us a reasonable chance of avoiding global warming of more than 2 degrees above what it was in pre-industrial times. And because that level of warming is, to a first approximation, related to the cumulative amount of emissions, so not just the emissions in any one year, but the amount of emissions added up over several years, you can come up with a budget beyond which you cannot produce any further carbon dioxide if you want to have a reasonable chance, say a 50-50 chance or an 80% chance of staying below 2 degrees. And so we worked out using a climate model what that budget would be for 2 degrees. And then what we did is we looked at how much carbon dioxide would be produced by burning all of the fossil fuels that we currently know to be in reserves. And that, again, is a relatively straightforward calculation. And what you discover is that we have far more potential carbon dioxide that would be produced if we burned all the world's fossil fuels than could possibly be allowed by that carbon budget for 2 degrees. So you face them with essentially with two choices. You either decide we're not going to keep to the 2 degree target, or you're not going to be able to burn all of those fossil fuels. And if it is the latter, for private companies whose assets are mainly all these fossil fuels, that has some pretty profound implications. It suggests, for instance, that their current valuations are not a proper reflection of their true value, because about 60 to 80% of fossil fuel reserves are essentially unburnable. And if you say to any company, well, 60 to 80% of your assets are essentially unrealizable, that means that, you know, the real issue here, that they are overvalued. If, for instance, collectively, all of the investors suddenly realized the straightforward arithmetic and decided all at once to try and sell their shares, it could, for instance, result in quite a bit of chaos on the World Stock Exchange. So one of the motivations for our report is to help people understand this arithmetic and start thinking through the consequences so we can have an orderly transition that doesn't result in a sort of a mass panic and a potential bursting of the carbon bubble with, you know, all the negative consequences that might have.
Well, let's talk about this carbon bubble. How would it compare to the 2007 bubble of U.S. real estate prices and all the securitization that was based on those mortgages?
Well, it's smaller, and the effect would be smaller because banks are important not just because of the value in themselves, but because they are a source of finance to every other sector. So the banking crisis has had broad implications throughout the economy. Now, with the oil, coal, and gas companies, they are a sizable proportion of the capital on the world stock market. So in London, for instance, about 25% of the market capitalization on the London stock market is accounted for by companies that are involved in oil, coal, gas, and mining for coal. So that 25% then is all potentially at risk, and it would have a very significant impact. But because we're not talking about banks, which are in a key position that affects all other economic sectors, it wouldn't be quite on the same scale, but enough to be something that would cause a great deal of disruption and a great deal of problems. If you think, for instance, about pension funds, for instance, that we pay in, well, they actually invest a lot of money in stocks and shares, and many pension funds hold lots of shares in oil and gas companies because they've been doing very well at the moment with high prices and a large demand. So it wouldn't just be restricted to those companies and the investors in it. It would also have broader implications for most of us.
Yes, we're told the Bank of England was warned in January 2012 that big reserves claimed by fossil fuel companies were a threat to the British economy and the UK investment and banking industry. Why Britain in particular?
Well, actually, all of the major stock markets, New York is also exposed, and in Europe, in Frankfurt. I mean, essentially, the global oil, gas, and coal industry is just that. It's global, and it's present all around the world. And actually, the partners in this report, the Carbon Tracker Initiative, they did an initial report back in July 2011, which spelled out this overall relationship that there were far more fossil fuels than we could possibly burn. And they, despite it being unarguable that that is the case, it really didn't trigger the kind of coming to terms with those facts that one would have expected. There is an element of the world stock markets and investors are in some sort of denial. They either don't believe in climate policy ever succeeding and that we will never reduce emissions in line with the desire of avoiding global warming of more than 2 degrees, or they believe that they can leave this decision to the last possible moment and then escape any consequences. And both of those sort of calculations are very deeply flawed. And to be honest, it also shows that there's been a degree of a lack of learning about the last crisis, because the banking crisis arose because large risks were accumulating in various parts of the financial system, and people were largely ignoring them. Not only were they ignoring them within their own enterprise and company, but they were ignoring the fact that they were growing in all the other companies in the sector. And we have a similar situation here where all these companies are carrying a large risk. And that is a formula for, if everybody suddenly then faces a crunch at the same time, that's a formula for a potential crisis that then threatens the stability of the stock markets themselves.
Well, we should give our listeners a taste of the credentials behind this report, Unburnable Carbon. Who did publish it?
So it was a partnership between the Grantham Research Institute on Climate Change and the Environment, where I work, which is a research center at the London School of Economics and Political Science, which is headed by Nicholas Stern, who wrote a famous report on the economics of climate change in 2006. And there's also, and our other partner was the Carbon Tracker Initiative, which is a non-profit organization that monitors the fossil fuel industry and its potential consequences for climate policy. We went through the process of checking our numbers rigorously and had various people review the report before we published. And actually, it's a fairly straightforward process. It doesn't require too much in the way of a complicated calculation to come up with this. And indeed, you know, we've seen other organizations like the International Energy Agency reach broadly the same conclusions as us. So that gives us a sense that what we're saying is true. I think then really the question now is, how do we get investors, regulators, and more generally policymakers and finance ministries to start to come to terms with this? Because if they act as if they don't believe the numbers, no matter what is presented, then that really is just storing up problems for them later. They can't wish away this situation. It's fairly clear that there is a fundamental mismatch between our current reserves of fossil fuels and the stated targets for our international climate policy.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith from Central London. We're talking with Bob Ward of the Grantham Institute. Well, yes, as you mentioned, there's been some reaction from big players. According to Damien Carrington in the Guardian newspaper, big institutions like HSBC, Citigroup, and the ratings agency Standard & Poor's agree this warning about the carbon bubble is legitimate. What are they saying?
Well, HSBC have been doing their own calculations, I know, and have been looking at individual companies to work out to what extent they are exposed and working out to what extent the value of that company is essentially too high at the moment because it assumes that all of their fossil fuel reserves could be burned and therefore are essentially assets that can be realized. So they've been doing that for investors and for their clients. Standard & Poor's, the ratings agency, also worked with the Carbon Tracker Initiative on another report that was published a few weeks ago, which looked at how the rating agencies should go about adjusting their ratings of companies which hold large levels of fossil fuels. It recognized that there is this fundamental mismatch between the fossil fuel reserves and the climate policy objective, and are beginning the thought process of how ratings might be used to encourage investors to start adjusting their expectations. One of the most perverse consequences of the current situation is that actually many of these oil, gas, and coal companies are only rewarded in terms of a rise in their share price if they each year discover more and more reserves. Now, if you think about it, they already have too much or far more than they can burn. So they're being rewarded for accumulating even more assets, which they can't possibly realize, and that's a rather odd situation to be in. It means that the problem is growing and growing rather than shrinking from year in and year out. And I think the ratings agency is interested in how they might use their ratings in order to try and exert a countering influence to start leading investors to more properly evaluate the value of these companies and the assets that they own.
Yes, for the people like the victims of Hurricane Sandy in the United States, their assets are our liabilities from the perspective of climate. And you talk about reserves, it seems to me it's almost like a possible Ponzi scheme. We've had a situation here in North America where oil multinationals are bidding on deep water drilling sites in the Gulf of Mexico when they haven't developed the leases they already have. It looks like they're just bidding up their claims for reserves to look good for investors. Is that what's going on, do you think?
Well, the investors in those cases, I mean, you're quite right, they're being rewarded for finding more and more of these fossil fuels. But it's based on the assumption that demand will carry on growing. Well, if demand carries on growing, it can't possibly be met through fossil fuels. Otherwise, we're going to end up with this, with a huge problem. I mean, any serious analysis of the science of climate change shows you that if we do warm beyond 2 degrees, we'll be exposing ourselves to a very, very different kind of world from the one that we've experienced. I mean, if we go to 3 degrees or more above pre-industrial levels, that'll be to temperatures that we haven't seen for any extended time on Earth for 3 million years. At a time then when the polar ice caps were much smaller than they are today and sea levels were about 20 meters higher than today. So if we're heading towards that kind of world, I mean, that would be an extremely risky world in which to be. And any assumption that we would just carry on as today, it seems to me to be just not really a very rigorous approach. So I think that, you know, the 2 degree target represents a very real threshold that governments have recognized as something that if we go beyond, we expose the entire planet and societies around the world to huge risks. So investors have to start recognizing that. This is not just some arbitrary political decision. This is a very real exercise in risk management, and they need to understand that if they can't possibly burn those fossil fuels without creating huge, massive risks that they themselves will not be insulated from. You know, nobody can guarantee in a 3 degree world that they'll just be able to carry on with business as usual. It will be a fundamental game changer, transform the planet, and investors have got to start understanding that. Absolutely clear and profound conclusion.
So what steps can we take as a society to reduce this risk posed by the carbon bubble?
Well, I think that in the wake of the financial crisis, we learned that, or we should have learned, the consequences of allowing risks to mount and grow, because eventually they get to a point where they create huge problems. And I think that there was supposed to be a recognition of the fact that one of the reasons for that was that the regulation hadn't been strong enough. But we appear not to be learning those lessons and applying them to this situation. So I think it's about people reminding policymakers of the need to manage risks in the financial markets and the risks that are now posed by fossil fuels if we don't find a way of curbing their use very strongly. Now, I should say that there is one slight additional opportunity for the oil, coal, and gas industry. There is a technology called carbon capture and storage, which allows you to capture carbon dioxide when it's produced from a power plant, and then you store it underground and prevent it from getting into the atmosphere. It's a relatively expensive and still immature technology, and actually we don't think that it could be deployed on the kind of scale that would allow you to burn all the world's fossil fuels. But what it could do is allow us to burn a little bit more than we would do if we didn't have this technology. But there is still no sign that the oil, coal, and gas industry is really investing very strongly in this technology, even though it could potentially help them realize more of their assets. And I think that's a measure of the short-sightedness. And investors themselves have to be more, I think, proactive in demanding transparency about the risk and about the level of reserves and what it means, and asking hard questions of the companies in which they're being, in which they're investing. And if I was an investor who held stocks in a oil, coal, and gas industry, oil, coal, and gas company at the moment, I would be asking that company what plans it has to develop CCS. And if it hasn't, I would think, well, it's not doing it some seriously, and I would think I might, there might be safer areas in which I can invest my money. And that's the kind of thing. So greater transparency, greater awareness of the risk is the first step. And I don't think anybody could seriously argue against that.
Some of the oil and gas companies have been investing instead in geoengineering research where they would blast sulfur up into the upper stratosphere in order to create a solar shield and thereby allow us to keep burning fossil fuels by cooling the planet.
Geoengineering has some useful possibilities, but the idea of putting a lot of particulate matter into the atmosphere, as you've just described, falls down to me on the sense that it would start blocking out sunlight, and that would have severe consequences for plants, quite apart from the fact that it would be a very expensive option. You'd have the problem of what to deal with all this material when it came out. But there are aspects of geoengineering that I think are still worth us investigating, simply because the scale of the challenge we face now and the urgency of it means we cannot afford to not to explore all potential avenues, because we may need to use all of them. And the kind of geoengineering I think that is worth looking at very seriously is that in which you find ways of essentially scrubbing the atmosphere, of extracting carbon dioxide out of it and then removing it and reducing the levels and storing it underground. But that kind of solution is far off, may never work, but it's worth investigating. But it is not an alternative to, as you described, finding alternatives to fossil fuels so that we start to cut down very quickly the amount of carbon dioxide we're putting into the atmosphere in the future. Geoengineering seems to me like looking for a safety net, but that doesn't mean that we should stop trying to take steps to limit the risk at this day, because that safety net may not be practicable in the end.
Well, it's early days, but have you had any feedback based on the movement behind this new report that could give us some hope here?
There have been moves to try and raise awareness on higher education campuses, university campuses. There's a big divestment movement going on being driven by Bill McKibben, particularly in the United States. I think it's really a decision for individual investors as to whether they want to disinvest in fossil fuels. But what I do think is true is that every investor should be aware of the extent to which their money is at risk when they invest in a company that is essentially overvalued because of all the fossil fuels they have. And I think that in the end, it will be an orderly transition away from these companies. These companies need to be planning not for growth in the future, but for gradual contraction as they make less and less of a contribution to our satisfying our demand for energy. And that needs to be an orderly transition. We don't want people precipitously going over the edge all at once. So that's really what we want, is investors to start becoming much more demanding and driving better decisions about the future of these fossil fuel companies.
We have been talking with Bob Ward. He's the Policy and Communications Director for the Grantham Institute at the London School of Economics. Together with the organization Carbon Tracker, they have published a report, Unburnable Carbon 2013, Wasted Capital and Stranded Assets. Find that at carbontracker.org/wastedcapital, or use the link to the LSE site in my Radio EcoShock show blog at ecoshock.info. Bob, thank you so much for warning us about this.
My pleasure, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. The climate threat to our financial markets and civilization, perhaps, is no longer a subject just for radical greens. There are ripples of concern right at the core of the largest trading systems, echoed by some of the world's biggest financial institutions. Some say the carbon bubble could bring on the next crash. In January 2012, a well-regarded list of power players wrote the British governor of the Bank of England warning the London Exchange was at the top of a fossil fuel bubble that could break.
Lord Stern and a team of analysts have released a new policy paper that explains that risk. From Australia, I've reached John Connor. He is the CEO of the Climate Institute in Sydney. John, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you.
Well, before we go into the details, some of them shocking details, I think, from this new report, what is the overall concern being raised?
It's a bit like the subprime, where investments, mortgages and people's investments continued on the basic assumption that house prices would continue to rise forever and ever. What this sort of research is doing is saying a lot of investments are going into fossil fuels on the assumption that we'll just keep building this and we can keep investing it, and the countries like China will keep using coal, keep using gas. And so what people are doing that in, they are either doing that in denial or indifference to the climate risk, or we think as well, increasingly, that they're doing this to try and get this up quicker before the real costs of climate change start to factor into investment decisions and before we see a flip, perhaps socially, politically, or even technologically, which will leave a lot of investments in fossil fuel assets stranded.
Well, Australia, of course, is a big player in this, being the world's largest exporter of climate-damaging coal, and Australian mining companies have recently announced even more grandiose projects to mine and ship still more. We did talk to Greenpeace campaigner Georgina Woods about that a few months ago, but could you refresh our memories? What are the coal companies planning on doing in Australia?
Well, look, we obviously, yes, we have been one of the biggest or second biggest coal exporter globally for many years. And what the research that we've just done, which is built off some of that research that you were referring to earlier, which found that basically if the world does get serious around 2 degrees, and then there's only a certain amount of greenhouse gases or carbon pollutants that can go into the atmosphere. And so we have a carbon budget. And if you apply that carbon budget globally to fossil fuel reserves, the research that the Grantham Institute and the Carbon Tracker found was that only 20 to 40% of assets, of fossil fuel assets, can be used. And so there's got a lot of wasted money there. What we've done is apply that to Australia, where Australia currently has 11% of the global market share. If you apply that to a carbon budget for coal, the reserves that we've already got listed for more than 90% certainty are more than double the carbon budget. And yet we've got another 100 gigatons or so of carbon pollution ready to go in broader resources and reserves identified by coal companies. So we reckon that those investments rest on a huge speculative bubble of climate indifference, denial, or dreaming.
And it may not keep on going that way, but it's hard to believe we would actually leave some coal in the ground. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's the thing. It's very hard for many in the fossil fuel industry to get their head around. But I think we are seeing investors and pension and superannuation funds starting to look at these things, and particularly those sorts of funds that, like pension funds, who are what we call universal owners, in that they actually invest across all the asset classes across the economy. And of course, they're starting to realise, they're starting to see now, factoring onto those portfolios, the impacts of climate change are already starting to creep on to their books and raising questions then about what goes on. The old thing that many of us have spoken about for some while, that the costs of inaction are going to be much, much more than the costs of action, is actually now starting to get discussed quite seriously at very senior financial and investor levels. And many of these guys actually have a stake in the fossil fuel industry themselves. And so getting them much more active is a central part of the work that we at the Climate Institute have been doing through a range of exercises, so like the Asset Owners Disclosure Project. But this is one exercise which is highlighting this for Australian investments in coal, and also trying to get people to get their head around this concept of a carbon budget much more, because it's not just annual emissions, it's not just emissions in 2020 that's critical. It's actually, if we're serious about climate change, we've got to actually think about the stock of the greenhouse gases that are up there in the atmosphere that are driving the problem.
We'll be right back in just a minute with more Radio EcoShock.